Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and lovable side characters. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my co-hosts and lovable side characters. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
I just want to warn people that the word Skrull will come up in this episode.
I'm out. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Longing. Busted.
Oh, no.
17. Also,
Gelajne.
Do you know what? We did a pre-show all about dogs, and I kind of want that to just be the show. It was a good show.
It's good. It was a good 10-minute conversation.
You're just going to have to imagine it.
Yeah, imagine it. It's as good as you imagine. Because we are here to talk about The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, currently airing on Disney+. And this week, we're discussing episode 3, entitled Power Broker, an episode in which the title of the episode refers to a character who I guess doesn't appear, or do they?
Or do they?
Or do they?
Yeah. We will have words about that later.
Oh, we will have words. All right. I am on, for the first time in this show, I am on recap duty, and I'm gonna make it through. It's gonna be a quick one, guys.
I'm glad, because A, not a lot happens, and B, you can just mow through that like a lawnmower.
That's what I do. Here we go. Yeah. We open with a commercial from the Global Repatriation Council, which is kind of creepy, although not quite WandaVision, Yo Magic creepy, about getting things back to the way they were, which transitions nicely into a van of thugs with the GRC logo pulling up to a safe house and John Walker busting out and interrogating everybody inside about where Carly Morgenthau is. Not particularly receptive. One guy spits in his face and Walker loses his stuff and almost, do you know who I am? Like, he's trying to get service at a restaurant. And the guy's like, I don't care.
Right. First of all, he was not like he was trying to get service at a restaurant. That was bad. Also, I
thought that was funny. Really?
We're going to do meta jokes now? I kind of admired the way that the police raid was not as violent as it could have been. Like, they sent Cap in first with his shield up, and he's like, look, I'm Cap. Don't shoot me.
Nobody's fighting him. Nobody there is even armed.
I don't know if you've been paying attention to the way police raids go.
We're talking, all right, I'm keeping us in a fictional space at the moment.
Okay.
Here we go then again.
I admired that. There's a weirdness where the aggressive Cap America does a police raid, and it is less aggressive than real life, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Fair. You know,
until he steps over the top. And I think that that's where you need the entry to be governed in effectively like a sensible position. So that his aggression afterwards is underscored as it being very much out of line as to what these people.
Right. And even he's not, he doesn't hit anybody. He doesn't even hit the guy, right? Like he just sort of gets in his face and yells at him.
Yeah.
And so
he doesn't sense that someone is offending him.
Right. It's not, he hasn't yet crossed the line, but he is edging ever closer up to it. Right. Right.
Yeah. Right. But like, I'm warming up to Battlestar, man. Lamar's got his number. He's like, yeah, this ain't kosher. Yeah,
you need
this
to relax.
Is not good.
So, not having found Carly and the Flag Smashers, they decide their best course of action. Best course of action is to follow Bucky and Sam, who seem to have a better lead, which is going to see Zemo, as we left them at the end of last week. Bucky decides he's going to go and see Zemo alone, and Zemo yanks his chain a bit by trying to activate him with the code words and claims something's still in there. But he also apologizes and is like, hey, look, it wasn't personal, man. You were just a means to an end. But he is interested in Bucky's revelation that somebody's trying to recreate the Super Soldier Serum and points out rightfully that you're assuming it's Hydra, which is why you came to me, because you're desperate. And good news for you, I know where to begin.
Stop. What, just stop right now, because I want to do one thing, and
this is all you got.
What are you gonna do, kick me off the show?
I could probably mute you somehow, I don't know.
You could probably mute me, you probably could, but listen to this. John, did you get a good look at that cell?
Not a super good look. What did I miss something?
It's about 8 minutes something in. I would text it to you, but whatever. The photos are having a hard time syncing right now. There is a toilet in his cell.
Well, they're not monsters.
I know.
They're not.
I know.
They're not an extrajudicial series.
That's the point he's making.
Right. They're not extrajudicial superheroes who have locked this guy up. It's the actual German prison system.
Right. There's an extra toilet roll on top of the toilet, which is it's just so thoughtful. I mean, he's still behind a bulletproof glass shield.
Uh-huh.
But
it's an embarrassment of riches.
As well, the point, he's got reading material. He's got a big bed.
Compared to people who have been held by Oliver Queen
or Barry
John
Allen.
John just spent years advocating for toilets.
I know. I feel like I've kind of blotted it out now because, I'm trying to forget my past trauma of seeing people who are just in a 4x4 cage with a metal chair.
That's everything you need.
Well, I've never been more excited to see a toilet. I'm like, hey, I see a toilet now. I'm like, hey, John would love that, which is weird.
Interesting.
Can't believe it didn't jump out at me.
So Sam and Bucky are in some mysterious place, and Bucky essentially wants to break Zemo out. Sam is very much against this, pointing out he's a psychopathic villain. And Bucky says, well, he's crazy, but he still has a code. He really hates superheroes and all that stuff. Sam gives us the quick 20-second recap. I appreciated this because my wife made me pause and explain some stuff, and then I unpaused, and then Sam basically explained the exact same things I had. Zemo blew up the UN. He killed the king of Wakanda, and the Wakandans are probably still pissed about that. foreshadowing. At which point, Bucky says, let me walk you through a hypothetical, and basically lays out exactly how he would break out of Zemo out of prison. I thought this seems a little weird because it is funny, but at the same time, I never had any illusions that this had happened already.
I started to as it went on. I was like, oh, he's already done this.
I kind of assumed from the get-go that he had done this already because, it's not that hypothetical.
The other thing is that all of these breakouts, and it's such a trope, and it feels so lazy, is that passing a note to some guy that some other guy is going to kill you. It's like, these are people, and it is not as much of a violent murder everybody that you possibly can kind of world that this sort of trope makes it out to be, right? Like, you're playing chess with the guy, fine. Okay, I understand that there's certainly gang frictions in certain prisons. One note that lands on your desk and you're going to go fight a guy that starts a prison riot? Like, you need a lot more than that.
Yeah, at least
right?
You should get one like, he took your cookies. And it's like, oh,
right.
It's don't mess like, with the guy's cookies.
It's just so... It doesn't make sense.
The thing that bothered me more than that was that why is Bucky being walked through the common area of where all the prisoners are? That's not really a thing, right? They wouldn't walk you through that area. They would bring Zemo out to talk to you or something. I think it's perfectly fine for TV prison. He also gives him a master key in his book, which there is no explanation of how he gets.
You can assume that he's been working on this for a while.
At least obviously. 20 minutes.
We'll give Bucky the ability of I'm really good at murdering people because I did that a lot. The fact that Zemo is reading Machiavelli really...
It's a little on the nose.
A little bit.
Yeah, he's probably read it already point.
Yeah, it's like, really? Oh, that's cool.
That was your whole plot in the last movie.
You're in grade six now? Right, come on, man.
Anyway,
well, I feel like they have some work to do to make him into a baron, right? Because there's no indication in Civil War that he's super wealthy or anything. He's more of a spy.
He's a special ops.
But they could have just said, "I'm reading The Prince," which is the book that everybody.
I'm reading Machiavelli's lesser known works, his B-sides, if you will.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Pick something.
The Baron.
Baron, exactly.
Like, you don't need to say, I'm reading Machiavelli. Everybody, it's so on the nose that it's just, it It read me the wrong way.
It's a little silly. Anyways, Zemo makes his entrance at the place where Sam and Bucky are and has a couple good moments where he starts trying to say things, if I may, and they're both like, no! I really think I'm invaluable. Followed by the title card. We learn this is these are all Zemo's cars, and he's got some gear in there, including a purple mask, and explains in order to sort of track stuff down, they're going to have to start, like, climb up a ladder of low lives, and they're going to start with a woman named Selby. They pull up to an airstrip, and Sam's like, whoa, you've been rich this whole time? At which point, we get the explanation, which is just, I'm a baron, Sam. Like, which is, you know what? I'm fine with it. I didn't need the background work. Right. It works fine. Right. He's got a private jet and an Alfred.
Exactly. Yeah, I texted, I think, you know, before John had watched it, I texted you, Dan, because you and Kat had watched it earlier. And I'm like, Batman Zemo is a lot of fun. Like, because he's a super dickish version of Bruce Wayne, right?
Who was already kind of a dick at times. So.
Right.
He's a huge dick. And Zemo is like, oh yeah, give them the bad stuff.
Right.
He's much more smarmy in this, though. You know,
yes.
I mean,
I enjoyed him immensely.
A lot more sympathy for him in Civil War, right? Because he's just spending his whole time, and he's clearly kind of like moved on from that.
I fear they're trying to make him into an anti-hero, like the Punisher.
I actually don't think we'll debate that a little bit later. Yeah, but okay. I have some theories about that. So on board the plane, Zemo has stolen Bucky's notebook where he wrote down everybody he's wronged and is asking about Nakajima. And then we learn that this is, in fact, I think as John pointed out previously, it is basically Steve's book in which Sam told him to write down Trouble Man, all the stuff he wrote down that he missed while he was in the ice. And we get into another discussion of Marvin Gaye, a bit on the nose. I feel like maybe they could have given him something else to talk, like some other thing Sam had recommended. That said, Zemo interjects about, like, Sam gives Bucky a hard time for not liking it, and Bucky's like, no, I totally liked it, in the way that you do when anybody recommends an album to you. You got this album, man. It was great. It was good. And then Zemo goes off on it, capturing the African-American experience, and Sam's like, he's out of line, but he's right.
My notes just say Zemo being that white guy.
Right.
Which is like,
Zemo would have voted for Obama three times if he could have.
Right, exactly. That is 100%
it was
that
still
reminds me of.
Very funny. And then Zemo waxes rhapsodic about the sort of the danger of the symbols and icons is that we start to forget about their flaws. Do we want to live in a world full of people like the Red Skull? And sort of pointing towards Cap's legacy and essentially the dangers of becoming a hero. So they go off to Madripoor, which is a former pirate sanctuary, which is their line on the super soldier serum. They can't walk in as themselves, so they have to pretend to be people. Bucky is pretending to be still the Winter Soldier. Sam is pretending to be Conrad Mack, aka Smiling Tiger, who dresses very fancily, but looks like Sam. We have a brief cutaway to Riga in Latvia, where there's a flag smasher camp. Carly is playing with a bunch of the kids, and then she's told she has to say goodbye to someone, an older woman who has that like flag smasher symbol or an older version of it, like the hand with a globe on it. And we get a mostly silent scene while she does so.
That's a religious totem for a lot of people in the world. Yeah, it's
okay.
So the palm with a thumb held over is a totem.
With the globe on it?
No.
Okay, so this is still version of it.
Right, yeah. Yeah. But I wanted to call it out because I think it's significant in terms of their certainty or something. Like it's not... I don't think that they took or they co-opted, the production designers co-opted that design by accident. I guess what I'm...
Yeah.
Trying to convey there.
The thing that struck me about this scene is that Carly playing with the kids, she is, I think they make a point of, she's really not much older than a kid herself. And that is an interesting dynamic. We don't, there's more of that as we sort of progress, but she's playing soccer with
the
kids.
Like her entry in the truck was like, okay, I'm a scared kid.
Right.
And they cast her perfectly. And I think they did the same in Solo. She's a wonderful actress.
Yeah.
Actor, I should say. But, she has a little bit of a very cute face with like freckles and like big puffy hair, and you do not immediately clock her as a threat. Like, if you're moving through a room and trying to figure out who's good and bad, you're going to look at her and be like, okay, you're fine. And that's exactly what happens to Bucky.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's sort of where the show is playing with us, and we'll get onto it. But I feel like they let us down a little bit there.
So back in Madripoor, they have to stay in character and go to Lowtown. They hop in a car, given a motorcycle escort. It's very cyberpunk, very neon drenched in this whole sort of area. There's a lot of people have noted the John Wick similarities, yeah, and this was written by the guy same guy. They head to the Princess Bar, which is apparently an X-Men tip of the hat. I guess it's a place where Logan hangs out at some point in the comics continuity. There's some graffiti, says Power Broker is watching, and they sort of make their way through the bar. They have business with Selby. Everybody's whispering about the Winter Soldier. We get a brief glimpse of a familiar face who hides herself behind a hoodie. Conrad Mack is given his usual, which involves cutting open a snake and taking out the venom. And Sam has to drink it to prove who he is. I love these, he says. Gives him a thumbs up when he drinks in.
Can I just tell you, any bartender that recognizes your face enough to offer you the usual can tell black dudes apart. I'm telling you.
Also, the bartender is, I believe, himself black. So, you know.
Well, A, that shouldn't matter.
That's fair.
B, you're in a service industry, and if you feel confident enough to be like, hey, your usual, you're pretty confident that, like, this is the guy you're talking to, right? This scene makes no sense. Just as it, whatever. It's kind of boring and a little bit rote. I do like that they put Sam out of his comfort zone, but it comes at the cost of basically making that whole bar and scene into I don't know, like a playground for stupids. It doesn't make sense.
It is an awkward scene because it's unclear whether or not they are supposed to know that he is not who he purports to be.
Yeah.
It's played kind of ambiguously, and it doesn't really make sense. Yeah. I agree.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work as well as I would have liked it to. Because we're also introduced to that scene by Zemo, who we can't trust, in a place that we can't trust. So who knows? You know?
There's a lot of stuff up in the air. I mean, Zemo is basically warned off at one point, told he's not welcome here. It's a little strange because he's told he's not welcome here. And he's also then explains the Power Broker basically is the in charge of Madripoor. He doesn't know him, he says, or he only knows him by reputation, and he wants to stay under the radar. But the guy just warned them off, which suggests that the Power Broker knows they're there. Again, it's a little... That whole scene is confusingly set up, I think. Bunch of people try to attack Zemo, and Zemo pretends to activate Bucky and have him beat up a bunch of them and sort of tries to sow a little dissent, because that is what Zemo does, by pointing out to Sam that it didn't take much for the Winter Soldier to sort of come back out. Selby, right.
That fight was awesome, because
it's well choreographed. Yep.
Yeah. Well, we've seen Bucky beat up a lot of people, but he's not kidding in this one. He's anybody he puts down, he gives him an extra punch. That's
the Winter Soldier promise.
Well, it's different from like Bucky beating people up to like, okay, I've solved the problem.
Yeah.
Immediately to okay, I've solved the problem and you go in a hospital for a year.
Selby agrees to see them. We have, again, following on that weird sort of ambiguity, which makes me wonder if they shot this scene and cut some stuff. She says, you're taller than I'd heard, but he has been here and has a regular drink. I don't know. It's a little strange. Zemo offers to trade info on the Super Soldier Serum from Selby for the Winter Soldier and his code words. She confirms the Super Soldier Serum is in Madripoor. There's a doctor named Wilfred Nagel who has been basically employed by the Power Broker to work on the serum, but things did not go as planned. However, more than that is going to cost him. At which point, Sam's phone rings, and it's Sarah telling them they've got to discuss the whole situation with the boat. Selby makes him answer it on speakerphone, and Sam does a very unconvincing job of pretending that this is... a scene that I think could have been tightened and done a little more funny, because he's like, he's demanding she explain the situation, and I'm like, what is your move here?
Right. I kind of thought it was going to work out.
I mean, I'm fine with him not really having a plan. because right. he was not, he did, first of all, I mean, he went in there without silencing his phone.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He's good
clearly
at this.
Unprepared for this. He's not a spy.
Yeah. I know. I just kind of figured your move in that place is to get off the phone as quick as possible. And instead he tries to spin it into something, which does not really work for him.
I kind of love that he wants to talk about the boat.
Yep.
You know.
Because it sounds like he's rich or something, like it's a yacht or something. That was all.
Who knows?
Then he wants to talk about laundering money. Drugs or laundering money.
He talks about the bank and like trying to get the bank, and he's trying to just have his sister play along.
Yeah, she doesn't know what's going on, and then eventually one of the kids like spills a bunch of Cheerios, and she says, "Sam, I'll call you back." Oh, that's bad news. Kill them. Selby is shot dead immediately. And they make a run for it.
Did you think Selby looked like Nana Visitor? I really wanted Nana Visitor there.
No, a little bit. Maybe the way she looks now, anyway. Yeah.
Right up until she got shot. And then I was like, oh, good. I'm glad that's not Nana Visitor anymore.
The bounty is out on them, and everybody starts following them and shooting at them. Sam can't run in the heels. Zemo disappears immediately, but then circles around and sort of saves them from getting shot. And somebody else takes out a couple of the bounty hunters with a sniper rifle. Their guardian angel, who turns out to be Sharon Carter, who we had mentioned last week in our bit of foreshadowing there. It's unclear to me, and maybe it was clear to you, she says Selby's dead. She doesn't say, I killed her. I assume that she did, because she has the sniper rifle, and I don't...
She shot her.
Yeah, I felt it was left a little weirdly ambiguous again there. I thought that was strange construction, but whatever. There's a little bit of tension there. You know, as Sharon explains her situation, she's been on the run. She didn't have the Avengers to back her up. And so she is, you know, kind of been stuck here.
Do we want to talk about that now or wait?
Let's wait a little bit. Okay. I'm going to try to get through this.
Yep.
Sharon takes him back to her place in Hightown, which has heavy security. She's decided to enjoy her life of, you know, being pretending to be a hustler by being an actual hustler. Her place is full of stolen artwork, including some real Monets. And they make fun of Sam for thinking that these are all fakes. There's a discussion as they sort of get changed in for a party that she's holding, about the hero idea. And like, she has become very cynical. The whole hero thing is a joke. So she kind of quizzes them about the new cap. Bucky is kind of ticked off about it. And she makes fun of him for being like, look, you're a total Stars and Stripe guy. You're Mr. America, Cap Psychic, which does prompt Bucky's funny line. Wow. She's kind of awful now. Sharon warns them off, telling them that Nagel works for the power broker. Sam says he can get her name cleared. I mean, hey, they cleared the bionic staring machine. She'll clear him he will clear her if she helps them out. They go to the party, which spawns the moment that spawns millions of GIFs, Zemo dancing during the party. Sharon claims that she found Nagel. And the next morning, they are going to the port where he's holed up in a shipping container while Sharon keeps an eye out. The container looks empty. It's got a false back. They find a lab and Nagel, and they interrogate him a bunch. But the bounty hunters show up, and Sharon starts beating them all up on her own, kind of brutally, like hits a few people with a pipe, knifes a guy, throws that knife into another guy.
I swear to God. this has to be a tribute to Atomic Blonde, right? Like... She's got the
little bit,
up.
It felt like that very much, yeah.
It's also a John Wick thing, but it's like, it's a blonde woman with a hoodie, and like, I felt like our pal Anthony Johnson wrote Atomic Blonde, and also drew the artwork for our show.
That is true. That is true.
Which is almost a criminal misuse of the time.
It's definitely that.
That you have Anthony Johnson, in your sights.
I won't tell you how much we paid him.
Really... Wait, did we pay him?
No, God, no.
I don't. He probably doesn't. He's got
a nice guy. He did it for free.
Yes. Yeah, he's awesome. But no, man, that scene with those series of fight scenes with Agent. What, 17? Agent Carter?
13.
Amazing. Like, that was some hardcore, hard-boiled beat-em-up action. And I loved it. And it only felt a little weird to me in that it was kind of tangential to what was actually happening. You know, like,
well,
who cares?
I think,
like,
it was interesting in that, yeah, it colored in some lines on her character. You know, we've seen her be, yeah, more cynical. She's got more of an edge to her. And clearly that has translated. Like, we always knew she was trained, but this is the first time we've actually really gotten a look at her in action, I feel like. And it, yeah, also showed she's, yeah, willing to, like,
period. I mean, she fights Crossbones a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, but, like, this, yeah, is far bit more brutal.
She definitely, right, stands up to him. She's like, yeah, okay, you know what?
Right.
Things are going south and I'm going to pull my gun on you.
Right.
But, you know, Remolo's.
Plus, that was, yeah, it, that was like 7 years ago, right?
Right. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. They threaten Nagelmore, and in one of my nitpicks, they shoot a gun, and Bucky shoots a gun next to his head, and I he know, barely I flinches. Just, I'm like, that is, that would be very loud. You would be deaf for at least 30 seconds.
Yeah.
We get a lot
it's
of.
Not a way you ask somebody questions. Yeah. It's like, oh,
it's
here,
not efficient.
Here's a way for you not right, to hear
he's
me.
He's not going
to
hear your next question.
Yeah. Right.
We get some backstory on Nagel. He was brought into Hydra and then recruited by the CIA, and they had a sample of super soldier serum in blood, basically implicated to be from Isaiah. He improved the serum.
It's weird that they go into his backstory of, like, and having his brother Patrick be a very phenomenal 1980s artist.
Stop it.
John.
Anyway.
John got it. And that's great.
I'm just going to keep going.
I don't care. There's like 8 people out there that got this, and this is for them.
Nagel improved the serum. It doesn't require any machines, and it doesn't jack you up like it did to Steve. It's subtle and it's optimized. But then he got dusted in the snap. And 5 years later, when he came back, the program was abandoned. So he came to Madripoor and ended up funded by the power broker. 20 vials were made, but Carly stole them. And then she called him. Weird choice. To ask him to help a woman named Doña Madani, who is dying of tuberculosis in a displacement camp. Zemo is walking around the lab at the time, kind of sneaking around, and he finds a gun. Sharon's still fighting off the bounty hunters. There's no serum in the lab, Nagel confirms, at which point Zemo takes advantage of a distraction with Sharon running in to kill Nagel, which everybody is shocked about because apparently they've forgotten who Zemo is.
Right.
At which point somebody rocket launchers the lab and stuff gets threatening to blow up. Zemo runs. The rest of our crew gets out there as it blows up and they're attacked by the bounty hunters. Sam and Bucky remain dysfunctional as they can't figure out how to team up to get out of there. Zemo puts on his mask, shoots a gas pipeline, takes out a bunch of bounty hunters and sort of clears the way for them. Bucky javelins a guy at one point, and Zemo turns up a classic GTO and decides to just drive him out there. Get in, losers. We're going somewhere. Bucky refuses to move his seat up for Sam again. Callbacks.
The reverse, right?
Bucky was in the back.
That's a good point.
I really, really, really wished that all we got there was a scene of Bucky inching his seat up so that Sam in the back could get more legroom. Because Bucky's been better at therapy. He's been trying to be a better person. He's been thinking
it's
it through.
It's not working out yet.
I know, but I would have loved that. I think it would have been a better character moment than the comedy beat that they went for.
Well, yeah. They're playing it. They're not getting along. It's going to change at some point. I mean,
yeah. Meanwhile, elsewhere, Sharon goes and is basically, you know, has one of her lackeys, lets her into a car and says, we've got a big problem. Actually, a couple of them spawning 1,000 theories.
Yeah, when you get into the backseat of a car.
We'll get there.
I don't get the sense that that's an Uber driver.
It's probably not. She's not going to fill in her Uber driver on what the problems are. Right. Meanwhile, in Vilnius, Carly and her partner are casing a GRC supply depot. They have some background on the two of them. He was mob security in Madripoor. She was basically displaced, ended up on the street after the blip, and she took the serum. The power broker is still following them, but Carly knows that Nagel is killed and they have the last of it, so the power broker is going to basically come to them begging for the super soldier serum. Meanwhile, Walker and Lamar are at the prison. They're going off book, and they're going to follow Sam and Bucky's trail. Sam is Torres looking into Doña Madani. He's struggling a bit as he talks to Bucky about the legacy of the shield. How many people have to get steamrolled to make their way for a hunk of metal? Maybe I should have destroyed it. Bucky says before Sam destroys it, he's going to take it from Walker himself. Torres finds Madani, but she's already dead in Riga. Zemo basically is interested to meet Carly, takes them off there. Meanwhile, the Flag Smashers loot the GRC depot. They've tied up all the soldiers. But Carly's not taking her car. She gets in the car with her buddy, and then her car blows up. He looks pretty put out and points out there were still people in there. And she says, this is the only language these people understand. He does not seem into it. The trio of Zemo and Sam and Bucky arrives in Riga, and we get a brief bit about Sokovia has been cannibalized by its neighbors. Bucky decides he's going to take a walk. When the other two disappear, he picks up a bead and that starts following what looks like a trail of breadcrumbs. Ends up in an empty alley, says, "You dropped something," followed by, "I was wondering when you were going to show up." And the camera pans over to reveal Io, one of the Dora Milaje, who is here for Zemo. Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
So a lot in this episode.
Yeah.
I think this was maybe the messiest episode they had to date.
I'm not a fan of this one, to be honest. We'll get there. But
there's parts, I think there's a lot of good stuff in small bits, but I think there's, in some ways, I don't know, it runs into that too much or not enough problem, where it's like
I think some of it, I feel like some of it is just confusion about like what might be coming, and I don't want to discount the possibility that a lot of this is going to get explained in later episodes.
Right, but I think there's...
So, I don't want to ding it. I don't want to ding it because they did a bunch of stuff that we just don't understand yet.
Yeah, there's table setting, and it's unclear to me. Yeah, it is unclear to me right now how much of this is messiness in trying to work through necessary stuff to get to someplace versus casting out a bit without like really having a clear idea of what your through line is.
Right.
I really think they put the story on pause to make Zemo go do that gift dance. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Okay, you're hiding out here. Why would you go to a party? Like, none of it makes sense.
Well, it's a different... I mean, they go from low town to high town, right? So, and it's supposedly less, I would
think.
Yeah,
you could have...
The other place is less dangerous.
You could have had people come to your room rather than going down to a party. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, we got parties, it's just rude not to invite people.
I get the point, but I do think that there's something to the fact that they are in a different part of town where things are, you know, you don't have to worry about.
But I do also get to the point of Guy, I think that like sometimes it feels like they have this idea for something that would be funny or cool, and they arrange stuff a little bit so that they get to make do that scene. And it doesn't really serve the plot. Like, it's a fine scene. I enjoyed Zemo a lot in this episode. I think he is smarmy and kind of delightful. I don't think they will try to redeem him. I think it's clear that he is still a bad guy. And I think the thing that's clearest about that is the fact that I was thinking about it. It's like, well, in some ways he's redeemable because like his biggest thing was making a bunch of superheroes fight each other. And I was like, oh yeah, except he killed the king of Wakanda, and that's kind of going to get him into super trouble, as we see at the end of the episode here. But also adding Wakanda into the mix on this makes me think like, whoa, we're halfway through this show, and you're adding more? Like, we've got to deal with Wakanda now? It feels like with six episodes, you either needed to slim down some plot lines, or you needed to expand some episodes if you really wanted to get into all this. We'll see how that goes next week, but I'm a little trepidatious about adding another thread to this late in the game.
Not only that, like that whole dance scene felt like something Oliver Queen would get into on Arrow. It's like, what's the purpose? Like, where are we going with this? Do we need another book club? I just
sometimes didn't. You just want to see Zemo dance.
It's true. One.
John. I mean, I just John, come on.
That was not my biggest problem with this episode. I will say that.
No it's certainly not my biggest.
I felt, here's the thing. I don't want to get into reading it yet. Ultimately, I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty great. It was a lot of fun. I think it turned the Flag Smashers, our enemies, into just sort of boring placards for Rando.
I'll disagree with that on the sense that I don't think it did that to the Flag Smashers. I think it did it to Carly specifically. Because her buddy at the end there is not happy with what she just did. And to me, they spend a lot of time in this episode giving you the head fake of thinking like, well, maybe these guys aren't so bad after all, right? Like, mm-hmm. And then they had it that, yes, they do pull the rug out from under you. Oh, nope, she's a murderer. She's still a bad guy.
Well, you sort of start wondering why the good guys are even going after them, and certainly why they're going after them so hard. I mean, yes, they've stolen a bunch of stuff, but they're, you know, donating it to people to save lives.
Well, it's the super soldier serum,
like,
right?
Like, that's even what bothering? Why are heroes necessarily
because,
even bothering?
Because they're super, they're superpowers.
So they have to throw in something and there's
well, otherwise they wouldn't be a threat, obviously. Right? Like, there's no reason to send, like, superpowered people after them if it's just a bunch of people ripping off supply depots. You would just send
in... Like, and it's just... But it's like, what if they're just like you? I mean...
Sure.
No one's running after you because you have the super soldier serum. And why, if they're good people doing good things, should you run after them? Maybe they should be on your team. But
they're still,
now,
I mean, they did.
Now, obviously, they're not the same, right? They're different.
Or at least some parts of it. There's friction within the ranks of it. They don't all seem to be on the same page about what their means are.
Yeah. I mean, my whole note on this whole Carly subplot is going a little arrow for me. And, you know, I liked Arrow, but I did think that it was like, oh, hey, why don't we blow up a bunch of tied up people? It doesn't read. It doesn't follow one from the other.
So
I think that's a failure of either writing.
Yeah.
And I suspect that the outbreak, the disease that they're dealing with has been changed in post. This episode doesn't make sense because I think it should have hinged on why Carrie is trying to make those decisions, and yet we get nothing. We got nothing. Somebody died, and now she's going to...
Yeah, I mean, like, so that's supposed to be the catalyst, right? But the problem is that we've never met this person before, and she's suddenly shoehorned into the episode and immediately dies in order to make this character do something different.
Right. Yeah, they needed more backfill on this character that needs to be done in a different order, maybe. I'm not sure. The pacing of this episode is a little weird too, depending on like what kind of stuff, because we don't get anything from them until very late in the episode, and then they have like three scenes that are kind of really close together, which felt a little weirdly parceled out, just in terms of like taking you away from what's going on with our main characters. There's some structural issues here. There are some story issues. I'm not saying they can't work them out, but when you have six episodes, your episode's got to be tight.
I think you could have done like some scene at the beginning of the show where Carly is with, I can't remember,
her mom.
Danya Madonna. It's her. Yeah. I'm guessing adopted mother. I think is
something
the implication.
Like that.
Sure. Okay, whatever. Yeah. It's clearly
and
your mother.
It shows them in happier times or something,
right?
You know, and explains their relationship up front. And then you get her as like seemingly a hostage, and you at least know who she is, and you think, and because the first scene is so bucolic, you think, oh, she must. It might even enhance that scene to like, oh, she must definitely be a prisoner because she was just a happy child in the beginning, or you know, her earlier when she was happy with this woman, and now she's stuck with these people, and then it turns out no, she's actually the leader.
Right, and we
and it doesn't seem like she's three episodes in suddenly here's this character whose big motivation
and I think it's tricky too because we started out seeing the Flag Smashers through the lens of Torres, who's kind of dropped off the radar, and now we've pivoted to seeing it through themselves, which is fine, but it feels the way the lens moves and the way we're asked now to sympathize with them except no feels a little tricky in terms of conveying who exactly are these people. And what is our protagonist's relationship with them? Because this episode, we get it divorced from them in the way that we did not get last week when we had, Bucky and Sam fighting them, right? Like, now we're seeing them through the lens of, like, okay, you're fighting these people, they're strong, etc. And now we've shifted into, like, let's be sympathetic about it, only no. And I agree with John, like, it felt like it needed more setup or needed to be done in a different order or something.
Yeah. Right. So what have we got now? We've got five factions, I figure. The bank trying to be jackasses to Sam and Sarah. We've got...
I'm not even sure that's... yeah.
I know. I don't think that's coming back at all. Sam and Bucky fighting with each other. So that's whatever, however many branches you want that to take, including the therapist. Now we've got the Flag Smashers, and there's internal strife with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Zemo. And he's just a catalyst for chaos.
Well, and that's before we even get the Sharon and or the Power Broker.
And right. So we're sitting on 7, 8. I lost track.
The next three episodes are each going to be 4 hours long.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a whole wheels within a wheels within wheels thing, but I think it needs to be a lot tighter. I would say, just to like point out, there's a great British cop show called Line of Duty, which is about essentially internal affairs, so anti-corruption and cop, like, so essentially dirty cops. And every season of this show is 6 episodes, and they craft the tightest, most tense plot that I've ever seen, I think, in a TV show. And this feels kind of the opposite, where it's like, we're going to do a little bit of everything. And I think part of the problem is balance. We spend the entire first episode with Bucky and Sam separately, and then dealing with their individual issues, which is fine. But then we put them together and spend an entire episode dealing with Walker and a little bit with Sam. It's like compartmentalized, rather than spreading some of these things out over the course of 6 episodes as like equal threads. I think they put a lot of emphasis on certain things in each episode, to the point of like, maybe they can pull this all together, but it is a high degree of difficulty.
Right.
Yeah. I suspect that their plans had to change just due to production issues.
I don't know. They were pretty far along.
And I feel like I'm giving them, I feel like, I mean, who cares? Do you know what? Yeah. What we see on the screen, same with, God help me for bringing this up, but the Justice League movie, what we see on the screen is what happened. That's it. And this, I think we should move into ratings.
Well, before we get there, I want to talk a little bit about the Sharon and the Power Broker situation, because I think there's a debate there. Like, I basically have, I think there's only two real theories here. One, Sharon is the Power Broker / working for the Power Broker. Or two, Sharon is still working for some organization. I mean, SHIELD is gone nominally in this version of the MCU, but some, you know, CIA or some organization that has her undercover. I think that, to me, strike me as the only real.
Yeah. I think, I promised at the beginning of this episode that the word Skrull would come up.
You think she's a Skrull?
I think there's a small chance that she's a Skrull, but I think it's more, I certainly hope it's more likely that she's working for the CIA. Well, we talked about this online at some point, but it seems like the simplest answer is that, yes, she is the Power Broker. I feel like that is a move for the character that I do not like. Because her aunt made a big deal of not spreading the super soldier serum around, poured Steve's blood into the Hudson, and, you know, for her to go back, you know, for her to suddenly decide, I'm gonna sell the super soldier serum, I think that's very bad. And the only way that I can think of that it makes sense is if she is a Skrull. So that's the reason why I go there.
But it doesn't make, even that doesn't make a lot of sense, because it's like, why do the Skrulls care, right? Like,
yeah, right. Exactly. There is no motivation for that. And it feels weird, but not.
I don't mind the idea.
Not improbable. I mean,
right. I don't mind the idea that she's become cynical and disenchanted with it, but I do agree that it's to go from where she was to where she is now, we've missed so much. That you're attributing so much to this She was bitter, and then she decided to become a supervillain. Right. Like that's
the reason why I jump to the Skrull thing, because I don't think her story makes any sense. Like she spent 5 years in Madripoor, so she did not get blipped. She spends 5 years in Madripoor. Meanwhile, Steve is alive on the other side of the planet, and Steve does absolutely nothing to help her. And how does that? That point doesn't make any sense to me either, because supposedly all the world, the world was under one government, right? Like the countries sort of collapsed and it became a more unified globe, and yet she has to stay in Madripoor and can't go back to the US because she stole the shield. It's just like, John, none of this seems to make sense, and so I'm trying to figure out how it might make sense, and perhaps going to far too great lengths in order to do so.
John, as soon as I can, I'm gonna just come and give you a giant hug, because no, it doesn't make sense.
Well, yeah.
It's dumb. It's really dumb.
Here's the problem. Like, they to a certain degree, I think they box themselves into a corner with the last place we saw Sharon was Civil War. And the movies did not feel like they needed to deal with her again after that, for whatever reason. And, you know, to be fair, there are a ton of characters, right? Like, there was no time, really. You could have maybe worked her into Infinity War or something like that, but it felt very... You know, that movie was super packed as it was.
You can't work her into Infinity War when you know that at the end of Endgame, Cap's going to end up with Peggy, her aunt. Right?
Like, you could if you ditched the romantic plot, but, you know, or did away with in some ways. Anyways, let me continue. Let's not talk about hypotheticals so much in that case, because I wanted to say, I think the issue is, there was an issue of practicalities here. And, you know, to a certain extent, again, that's no excuse, but... When you have the issue of, we haven't seen this character on screen in 5 years and we don't know what happened to them, it feels a lot to attribute all this stuff to things that were not, you know, you didn't show your work, right? And so instead, it feels like maybe if it turned out she had been blipped and then she came back and now she's working undercover or something, like, that story works better for me. And they have problems, right? Because they didn't have time to spend, like, let's have Steve reach out to her and, like, be really apologetic or whatever. They left it where they left it, and that's on them for writing that story. But it's tough to sort of dig yourself out of that hole.
Yeah. And the whole setup doesn't make sense to me either. So if she's the power broker, she kills Selby, and then, which triggers offering a big reward to all the bounty hunters in town.
She kills them all, unless she's trying to, like, eliminate the competition.
And then she has to fight all the bounty hunters.
It's not a good
plan of that.
Yeah.
No, again, that's why. Yeah. I mean, I hope it's the CIA thing, because, and there's a lot of references to the CIA. She makes a lot of references to the CIA.
Nagel's working for
them. Nagel talks about the CIA. Walker says that, he's, you know, talking to Langley.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like there's a CIA shoe that's going to drop at the end.
CIA reports to what? DOD or state? I think it's state.
Or it's, they have a, reports now to the DNI, I believe, in our world, which is reports to the president.
Okay.
So, yeah, okay, it's part of the intelligence community.
I'm sorry we live in a more collapsed and awful world than that. But yeah, okay, so my supposition was that by the CIA reporting to state, last we saw of General Ross, he was Secretary of State.
Yeah, right.
That's true. That was, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's the only reason I was like trying to track that down.
And I don't know. The other issue with the power broker is you have a couple problems with, like, if it's not Sharon and it's not Zemo running this super complicated game, which also
it's
is
also,
kind of
by
unsatisfying.
By the way, at this point, not Ross, because Penny Annie's stuff, like, I'm going to shoot you, I'm going to track you down and kill you, is not what randos, like, it's not what people high up in the American government said to you, unless, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess my
they're the people that are just...
The thing that's weird...
If I can just finish my point for 1 second. Yeah, I wouldn't say that if it's not Sharon and it's not Zemo, our economy of characters is extremely limited, which means you either have to pull somebody out of the deep MCU backfield that makes sense, which I think is a tall order, or it's some character we haven't even met yet. It's also a bad idea because we're halfway through the show.
It's the Grandmaster. Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if Jeff Goldblum shows up? Show? Yeah.
Oh,
just
yeah.
completely out of the blue.
I'm the power broker.
I have Stearns on my Samuel Stearns on my list. The guy that got hot-blooded.
Right.
I really thought it was going to be.
I would like that. But
I was like, I saw a thing in the credits. Yeah. My conspiracy theory this week was I saw a thing in the credits which references the Union of South Africa, and then I had to look up to make sure Claw was dead. It's like, oh yeah, he gets shot in the head. He's probably pretty dead.
I think he's very dead.
Yeah.
So the weird thing that I was going to note is that when Sharon comes in the door, Zemo kills Nagel
because he could have identified her in theory.
Yeah, but like, why is he covering for her? I mean, is that what he's doing?
I
mean,
he used a distraction to kill them, to kill Nagel because he just wants to end the super soldier knowledge.
The other thing that I thought is that he's working with her somehow and was killing him so that the other two don't, you know, like, so he doesn't say, power broker, you're here.
Yeah, exactly. But then he would have to know, you're right.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of questions, and I'm right. My biggest worry at this point is I just don't think you can answer all of them in three episodes.
Right.
And I think in like guys said, long I don't list, wanna,
right? Like just because I'm confused right now, I don't necessarily want to damn this episode for that.
Right. A lot is hanging on the next couple, though. Right. Like a lot is hanging on those to start tying things up, as opposed to opening more questions. And to Guy's earlier rundown of all the various conflicts that we have. I don't think you even had. Did you even have Walker in that list? Because like,
I didn't.
Like that's another thread. Yeah. Like there's so much here.
Walker and Lamar. It's like it's crazy. There's too much conflict going on. There's.
Yeah. I mean, is Lamar going to get a better name? I mean, he should.
Well, no, Lamar is awesome. Battlestar.
Lamar is a great name, but Battlestar is terrible.
Right.
There's a whole background to that character in the comics, apparently.
Bucky, get out of the Jeep.
Yeah.
Right.
It is a bad name. All right. We should probably rate some stuff. Although I feel like, we're going to. This is going to be an interesting week to rate
it
things.
Good. I'm going to be interested.
It is. Finally. Finally, we have a reason for a rating system.
Do you want to go first, guys, since you seem to have feelings?
Yeah. The show is a biff, which means it's great. We're going to keep watching. We're engaged with it. I suspect we will all agree that you all should keep watching it. Within that range, I feel like this episode is a bit of a John Jr. Let me down. Felt like it was going through the paces a little bit. It didn't particularly land with me. It felt like it had been edited in a way to try to fix things up between the previous two and, you know, what's going to go on. And I understand that that's something that is required in the middle to sort of make things work. I can't be excited about this show. Here's the thing. I watched WandaVision, I don't know how many times before each of these podcast recordings. I watched this episode once, and then once again, kind of skipping around right before this. And so for me, that's a John Jr. Like, I really... It's fine. But it's just fine. Hmm.
John?
I think it's better than that. I mean, I definitely agree this is the most problematic of the three so far. I'm still giving it a biff because I enjoy the show. I'm having a good enough time with it that I, you know, like... Even the confusing parts, there's enough to it, like, you know, Sharon's fighting all these guys. It's a great fight. It's a really good fight. And I don't know why. I don't know, like, what are the motivations are behind what's going on necessarily yet, but I'm going to wait to figure that out. And hopefully they're going to deliver. Usually Marvel does a very good job with that stuff. We were very confused in WandaVision about stuff that was going on, and that all paid off in spades. So hopeful that they somehow pull a rabbit out of that with this one, and we'll see. I'm less secure in that thought than I was with WandaVision, but I'm still hoping it works out in the end. And there was enough fun stuff in this episode that I still enjoyed it quite a bit. So that's why I'm rating it the way I am.
Yeah. John Maltz is a real Jean-Luc Picard.
I think, yeah, I would say I'm probably in between you guys on this one, because I think I agree with John. Like, while I was watching it, I felt entertained and I felt like caught up in it. And I did not spend a lot of time worrying about the complexity until I sort of backed up and started talking about it with other people, at which point I was like, yeah, there are some problems here. And I think if it suffers from what a writer acquaintance of mine calls the soggy middle problem, where it's like, you got a great idea of how you want to start the show, you got a great idea of how you want to end the show. Getting from A to B sometimes ends up with this situation where it's like, oh, we're going to meander around a little bit. We're going to throw this out there and throw that out there. And it's got kind of that issue where it's like, you're not making a super compelling case for me in the middle here. Doesn't mean you still can't have a good ending, but your middle is soggy. There's just too much. It's overloaded. It's going to break that paper bag, right? And I think that's my struggle with this episode, as I take the sort of 35,000 foot view back from it. It's just, it feels like it's not quite sure and it needs to tick some boxes before going some places, but it doesn't really entirely know, or it's got too much going on. It's overpacked. There's some issues here. And so, like John, I'm optimistic they can bring this home in the next few episodes, but they have just made this job a lot more difficult for them by sort of meandering a bit. So I'm going to give it a Biff Jr., which is in between a Biff and a John Jr.
Wait a second. Let me flip some tables, because we cannot change
this.
This
is a very serious rating system.
The rating system is set in stone, brought down from the mountain on high.
Yeah. I wish I'd thought of Biff Jr.
I was struggling for a bit there. I was like, Biff? That doesn't make any sense. Ooh, a Biff Jr. Yeah, that works.
What's the mountain that Oliver has to climb? The
Ra's al Ghul mountain? I don't know what they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Ra's al Ghul peak.
So big shoes to fill in the weeks ahead. I did want to mention before this, before we wrap up, there was a new Black Widow trailer a couple days ago, I think.
Yep.
And a Loki trailer.
The Black Widow trailer, I showed it to my wife, who is very down on the idea of the movie, and she watched it and she said, that trailer was a lot better. I am way more interested in seeing it now than I was before. And I thought it was a pretty solid trailer, and I'm looking forward to that movie. I know there's a lot of drama wrapped up in that character, I feel like, and the fan reactions to
put something on the screen. We'll enjoy it or not.
Oh, yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. I think that it's a situation where Marvel dug themselves into a hole. And I'd like to see them work themselves out of it a bit. So I'm hopeful.
With the release or with the just like how they set the character?
I mean that character. And they've not done well by that character over the time. And I feel like it's nice that they are taking another shot at it, and hopefully it works out better. And I do want to note that the villain in this one is Taskmaster. If you could just put that in the show notes, John.
I will not.
And then there's a Loki trailer, which looks fabulous. I'm super looking forward to that.
Continues to look just absolutely amazing.
It looks a bit, that one looks a lot more like Legion almost to me. Like, it's got that super weird vibe going on. And I really enjoy Owen Wilson, and I'm delighted to see him there.
Yeah. The two of them just chatting across the table.
Yeah, do we give them a Piper Award? Because the DC Marvel...
If you're a crossover, I think you have to be like... Is it like three?
I think it's just...
For the Piper Award? Are you kidding? Do we have rules?
Yes, there are strict rules.
Who are you Piper Awarding there?
Wilsons?
Because they're brothers and they're in different universes.
I mean, really? I can't believe you guys just didn't go for that immediately, because we've done a lot of dumb things, and I just thought you would jump on that boat.
Well, unfortunately, the bank has repossessed that boat.
Guy, this is a very serious show.
Yeah, please.
I'm very sorry about that.
Please. All right.
I don't need your cracks.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. And, of course, thanks to the rest of my awkwardly tense trio. John Maltz, thanks for being here.
I am not a Skrull, because I brought it up, I feel like I have to say that.
That's fine. Disclaimer. It's important. Guy English, always a pleasure.
I am not a Skrull.
I am not a Skrull.
I am not a Skrull.
Thank you out there for listening, everybody. Please feel free to shoot us your letters, biff@theincomparable.com or @biffcast on Twitter. We've been enjoying hearing your feedback on this show and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And we'll, you know, I guess we've got Loki lined up to do after this, but it doesn't, I think it doesn't start till June. So we might have a bit of a gap in the middle there. We'll figure something out, I'm sure. Or not. That's the way we do things around
we'll
here.
We'll just meander through this show like
that's the Biff promise. Anyways, thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next week.